Welcome back to the Hockey House Pod, episode 149, presented by Selly Hockey Co. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you the latest news from around the ACHA and AAU college hockey. It's great to be back behind the microphone with the boys, catching up on some things. We'll wrap up the first semester. We'll get into the holiday break. And of course, we will talk about arguably the greatest moment in ACHA hockey history. And we'll get more in depth with that when we have on associate head coach from UNLV, Nick Raboni, in a little bit here. But first and foremost, we'll catch up with the boys. We'll throw it over to Chicago first. Fitzy, how we doing?
I'm doing good, boys. Just rubbing some lint and dust off the mic here. It's been a while. I know some of the fans were in the comments asking when we were going to be back. So it's good to be back after a little holiday break and, you know, just life happening. But yeah, all's well. Can't complain. Still got men's league guys trying to fight me, and you know, all's well in the world.
We're like, you know, when Oasis going back on tour, right? Like we don't come out as often anymore. So when people are getting the notification on Friday morning that a new episode dropped, they're gonna be pumped.
It's classic Econ 101 here. We're a little bit of, you know, take back the supply, and the demand was going up. We know what we're doing here.
Exactly. Anything in particular in men's league, or same old causing fights?
We had a guy last night. He you know, it was a give and go, and he grabs me with the free hand when I don't have the puck. I'm going around him, and so I just turn around and slash him, and then it's, you know, all my fault. And I wear a cage when I play. This guy's a half around. He's like, "You want to go right now?" And I'm like, "What? How is this happening? Like, what did?" It was just, I don't know. People are, when they hit the ice, they turn into something they're not sometimes. And I told him, yeah, I'll go. I got the cage on. You got the halfer. Let's go. This should be fun. So he skated back to the bench and we never went. But I don't know what it is. It's maybe it's just the world we live in and that's how things are now. But yeah, it's the same old story in men's league.
We had, I'm playing in two leagues in Quincy. And one of them runs like all through winter. It's like a 32 game schedule. We got, you know, there's 16 teams in the league and you play everybody twice or whatever that math adds up to. But with the Frechette Tire guys and my brothers and their friends, it's so funny. Like there's three seasons. There's a fall, winter, a winter, spring, and a spring, summer. So you're playing the same teams year round and it feels like there's never really a break. And then all of a sudden, it was the winter playoffs and, I didn't even really know that we were into the playoff season. And then we had a big first round win. We were the five seed. And then we played the one seed to start and we upset them in overtime. And then we ended up winning the championship. So it was a good run for the boys in the Wellesley men's league. But it was funny. The team that's the one seed is probably one of the more physical teams in our league. And you kind of just know that that's the game when you play them. And we were playing against them. I get the puck at the point. I'm like walking the blue line again, channeling my inner Cale Makar, just taking that puck for a ride across the blue line. And I stop on a dime to shoot it on net. And there was a kid chasing after me. And when I stopped, he just full on kept skating. And it was a smaller kid too. Like not one of the guys on their team who's usually like trying to go for the rough stuff. And I had no idea he was coming. I didn't expect it. And he just crushed right through me. And I fell down. I fell over. I was like, wow, that's like the biggest hit I've taken in a while. And as soon as he touches the puck, like arm up, ref blows the whistle. And I got guys on the other team yelling like, "He had the puck. He had the puck." And then, like the guys on my team were like, "Dude, it's men's league. It's non-contact." clean hit 4 years ago when I was, you know, doing the same thing in the blue line at Delaware, it would have been a clean hit, but those days are long past. And it just, that makes me think of, I put myself in a Fitzy situation there. Collins, how we doing in New York? Are you surviving congestion pricing, or is that above your pay grade?
That is 100% above my pay grade. No way in hell I am ever living with a car in this city. No way. Even though today I really wish I had one. Took me an hour to get back from work compared to the normal 30. So that was brutal. But yeah, just been living life, enjoying the city, you know, embracing my Murray Hill, or living in Murray Hill, becoming a Murray Hill bro. I've ascended to the next level of Murray Hill bro. I am now, I'm now a DJ. after all my friends who are DJs convinced me to get a set of DJ decks. So we're working on it. But yeah. Not much hockey going on in my life. Over the break, I played for the first time since April, late April before graduation. So I hopped on the men's league with the buddies down in Baltimore, and lungs were fine, legs were fine, hands though just were not there. Hands and eyes were not there. It was rough, but you know, hopefully by the time the spring rolls around, we'll have the gear up here and we'll play more men's league in the city. Might be honestly pretty tough though.
You're gonna need that gear if you want to ride the subway safely. Jeez, holy cow. I mean, we don't have to get into the politics of New York here, but you might need that cat eye cage when you're going down below.
Yeah, I mean, in my time here, I've seen some weird stuff today. This wasn't bad, but there was just like this lady in Fulton Street Station just doing stand up. Just she had a speaker, everything. Nobody was watching her. It was really bad stand up. I like, you know, lowered the music, went like transparency mode on the AirPod, just try and listen to a few jokes. It was really bad, but you know, props to her for trying.
I recently, you know, when you live on your own, you don't get a lot of, I was like living on your own. It takes me back to like when we would be skating during the COVID days and we had no games, like practicing with no games, like, I rarely have people like come by my apartment. So the other day, a good friend of the show, Matt Zarb, team of mine at Syracuse, roommate, he was visiting from Seattle, and you know, it was like getting up for a game, right? Like I'm prepping the apartment, we're making sure everything's clean. I'm doing a grocery store run. We're getting frozen pizzas, we're getting frozen mozzarella sticks, chicken tenders, the works. And I went out, got an air mattress. So now, Collins, I know you're talking, you're psyched. Your sister's going to BC. We got to get you ready for the bean pot soon here. So air mattress is good to go. We have that now. And it was just great getting to host. You know, I'm finally settling into Boston and getting to show him around. It was a lot of fun. You guys will appreciate this, but I don't know if I mentioned it a couple episodes ago, but the closest landmark to my apartment is the original Dunkin' Donuts here in Quincy, Massachusetts, which is they've got the big old school script Dunkin' Donuts sign out front. And it, you know, it says established in 1958, whatever the year was on the side. And I told Matt, I was like, hey, like when we go, like cause he's a Starbucks guy in out in Seattle, like they don't have any Dunkin' nearby. And we loved going to Dunkin' at Cuse. And so I told him on the way, I was like, we're going to the original Dunkin' Donuts. And he just laughed it off. And then when we pulled in and he saw the sign, he was like, no way. He was like, dude, I thought you were just making that up to make it seem like we were going to some special Dunkin' Donuts. And I was like, no, dude, when in Rome, you got to go to the original Dunkin' Donuts. So that was a highlight of my winter break. And then I hadn't been, that was my first time I went. And then sure enough, it was a little low on groceries 3 days later when I came back into town and had to stop by there for a good old bacon, egg and cheese on a plain bagel. So I guess we don't need to get into my fast food habits. We can get into the real headlines here. I want to know, guys, like, where were you when you saw the news that UNLV, I guess we'll start, where were you when you saw the score of the UNLV? Because I was at the Bruins game with Zarb that weekend, and come out of the game, and it's like, are you watching? I get a text, are you watching this? And I look, and it's 5-1. And I did a double take because I'm like, oh, like, they're losing 5-1. Like, we're tuning in because it's like they scored a goal or something. I'm like, oh, my gosh, UNLV is up 5-1 against Denver heading into the third period. And I quickly watch a couple of the highlights and I'm like, oh my gosh, like the Denver start their third string goalie. And I'm like, no, that's Matt Davis, the guy who like carried them in the NCAA tournament last year. And it was just a crazy turn of events. We almost had a hockey house jinx. It was 5-1. I think by the time we started covering it, it was very quickly 5-2, and then 5-2 became 5-3. It was, I think UNLV went up 6-4. Denver stormed back and tied it, got a couple power plays in the third there. And it, they, UNLV just bunkered down, but it truly was a where were you moment in the ACHA. So Fitzy, I'm wondering, like, what were you doing when you found out UNLV was making a game of it?
I was playing some Nazi zombies with my brothers, the new Call of Duty Black Ops game, but I was the same deal. I found it right at the end of the second period. I think my cousin might have said something when in the Xbox party, and he was like asking if I had seen it, and it was like 5-1. Like, this is crazy. And then I saw you guys started texting about it, and I was thinking about the jinx. I was like, I'm not even going to like follow this. I'm just going to wait until this is all over. I'll come back and see that they won. And then I think my dad ended up yelling up to me saying that UNLV won. And then I go in and I'm like, holy shit, it was a shootout. Like, that's kind of insane. They were up 5-1 and it turned into that. But no, it's wild. I should have, I mean, not that it's going to correlate over, but UNLV was going to be one of my bingo picks this year. I was going to go out on a limb and have them be winning the national championship in the ACHA. So I wasn't too surprised. I mean, obviously I'm surprised, but it was, I know they got a good squad over there, and I can't imagine what, like, going into that game, if you're on UNLV, like, gearing up for that, like, you have nothing to lose, obviously, but you're like, you know, a 1980 USA Miracle on Ice type feel to it. It's the other team that has all these unreal all-stars that are, you know, going to play in the NHL, likely most of them. And you guys are just a bunch of club hockey players. So I wanted to be in that locker room so bad with those guys, not even playing necessarily, just to feel the emotions and everything. It's absolutely unreal, and hats off to them. It's awesome.
It was so cool to see. And not only that, just the reactions online and everything. And we kind of talk with Coach Nick Raboni about it, and hey, like, what were some of, we get into like who some people who texted him after the game and just checking their phones afterwards, what that was like. But even then, like, I was in the bar, I pull up the live stream at the bar. Shout out to Anthony Larkin. He was just streaming it on the Limitless Hockey Instagram story. That's how I watched the shootout. And some guys come over and they're like, what are you guys watching? And because they thought we were like betting on it. They thought we were degenerate gamblers. They're like, why are you guys watching this janky stream? And he's sure enough, he's like, oh, like, no way. Like, I played club at UMass. And we're like, oh, no way. Like, we played a club at Syracuse. And then, you know, all of a sudden we go across the street to a different bar and our bartender's wearing a URI hockey hat. And we're like, no way, we played at Syracuse. And then he's like, oh, like, these guys played at URI too. And so we're talking with the URI guys and they're like, did you guys see the Denver UNLV game? We're like, yeah. And they're like, dude, the group chat's been blowing up tonight. And it was just like all the club hockey guys coming together on one night. Collins, I'm sure you were in a couple team group chats that were going pretty crazy when it all went down.
No, not really. the team group chats were dead silent.
Group chats were dead. No, nobody had the game on at a bar in New York.
No, I was home. It was home for Christmas.
That's right. So that's right.
I was actually had just finished playing Black Ops 6 multiplayer. I've been grinding that Prestige 4. 1.5 KD, just for anybody wondering. Anyways, no, but I was, I was just sitting on the couch and I see, the post on Instagram and I'm like, oh my God. And I texted, the Hockey House group chat, like, does anybody have a login for this stream? Because I didn't want to pay $15 for one game of, or not even one game, for a period and a half of, you know, NCHC TV. But the aftermath of all of that has been hilarious on Twitter. I know we brought it up, you know, a couple minutes ago, but I was trying to find the post from Reddit CFB, or the quote tweet from Reddit CFB on Twitter. But the responses from people who have no clue what the hell the ACHA is, like, what the hell, like, really college hockey even is, I guess, you know, to some degree, all the football fans, truly, truly incredible. Like, I think I saw one reply to this tweet that was like, you know, what was it? Like, explain this in basketball terms. It was like, your college intramural team just beat the Denver Nuggets. Like, put some respect on their name, I guess. Like, come on. But it, I mean, the reaction was amazing, and this has done so much for, you know, the ACHA and AAU. Like, this is, you know, becoming a real threat. I said it in the group chat. You know, this seems like, or not this seems, but there are two outcomes of this game. One, UNLV is no longer on the guest list at Denver. They're gone. And two, no NCAA D3 team will ever play a top 25 ACHA team ever again, because that looks terrible for your program. I might be making a bit of a stretch here, but still, like, incredible, incredible moment for college hockey.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I hope the result of this is we get more exhibitions. You know, I hope there's some, you know, teams who maybe didn't want to schedule ACHA teams for exhibitions and are now like, hey, like, instead of having that, you know, Canadian school come down, like, let's just have a local ACHA team do an exhibition, you know, because this is, I don't think this is going to become a regular occurrence where ACHA M1 teams are beating defending national champions. I think because of this game now, you are going to get, you know, no one's going to sleep through it, right? You know, who knows what the Denver guys were up to the night before the game or what they were doing in preparation. You know, David Carl, one of the best young coaches in hockey right now, and he just won his second World Juniors, and, you know, he's the head coach of Denver, and he was gone. You know, like, what kind of impact does he have on the locker room? And I'm sure there was a conversation about doing this exhibition while he was away from the team and them being able to handle it all. And then not only that, but the Ziv Buyum, who when I watched the third period of this game, and I was like, yeah, like, you know, having Ziv Buyum out there wouldn't have made a difference. And then I watched the World Junior final, and I'm like, I don't know. I think Ziv Buyum might have been a difference maker if he had a chance to play against UNLV. But it's crazy how it all aligned and how it all went down.
Yeah, I mean, I think you also got to mention too, like, I mean, it was a hot point of contention in the comments section on the UNLV win graphic, on the Denver win graphic. Like, is, you know, the head coach and Ziv missing, is that, you know, really your difference maker? But I think at the same time, too, you have your goalie who, why am I blanking on his name? Davis.
Matt Davis, yeah.
Yeah, Matt Davis, who went it was 4 goals on 7 shots or something like that in the first period.
No, I was going to say, I had to watch the Denver played at Maine the very next week.
Yeah.
And Matt Davis stood on his head and they got a road win against number 6 Maine. So it's like they had the same exact roster that lost to UNLV in the shootout, and then they went and beat Maine on the road. So it's somebody, I think the best take I saw on it is just how razor thin the line is between NCAA and ACHA. You know, the top end talent, it just, there's such a log jam of talent in college hockey right now that's what makes a game like this possible, that you can't just show up and beat a UNLV. You can't walk into the rink and show up and beat them. You have to show up and play the game. And that's why, that's, you know, Denver didn't schedule this exhibition to lose. They scheduled this to win. And it just goes to show that, you know, it's not a guarantee every time.
Yeah. One last thing before we move on too. I'm not 100% sure if this is correct, but I think it is. I might be wrong. Somebody can fact check me on this. But I believe Denver's top line was -5. I think they were -5. I might be wrong. That's what I saw on Twitter. And I think I verified it myself after I saw it, just looking at the box score. But still, I mean, this gap is only going to continue to narrow too with, the addition of Major Junior being allowed to play in the ACHA or not in the NCAA. And I guess, yeah, now by definition too, the ACHA, with the, you know, since we use the NCAA rule book. So, yeah, it's going to be wild. Get ready.
I would recommend to anyone who hasn't or missed the game or didn't want to pay for and you know, the streaming service, what was NCHC.TV, great YouTube channel, NCAA hockey highlights. They had a 15-minute highlight package of every goal, the entire shootout. It was great to watch the next day, like, because, like I said, I missed the first two periods of that one. And so go ahead, check that out on YouTube when you get the chance. They did a really good job. I want to make sure I give them a shout out. But some other headlines in the club hockey world. We concluded the outdoor college hockey series at Truist Field. Very successful event that's been going on the last couple of years in Charlotte, home of the AAA Charlotte Knights. AAA baseball, so don't be confused with the hockey lingo here. But they scheduled four games. They played three of them, which I think is a pretty good batting average when you're doing an outdoor game in North Carolina. And so the first one, we got off to a rocky start. Vandy and Denver, not Denver, Vandy and Duke, they went out there for warmups on Thursday night, I believe, back in November, and the ice was deemed unsafe and they didn't end up playing that game. But they, you know, they got the photos, they got the walk-ins, they got the outdoor jerseys. So, you know, a consolation prize for that, but I feel bad for those guys who didn't get to play a game. Following night, Charlotte came out and they beat App State, a little rematch of last year's outdoor game there. And then the main event was on Saturday night. South Carolina took care of business against NC State. And then this past week on January 4th, we had one final game and Virginia Tech came out and rolled North Carolina to start the second semester. Virginia Tech coming out in these orange Hokie inspired jerseys and UNC rolling with some cream 50th anniversary jerseys in that one. So great event. I hope they continue to do this. I think it's a great opportunity for these schools in North Carolina to get together and, you know, have some fun outdoor jerseys and get the fan base together, get the alumni groups together and put on an outdoor game. I don't know if you guys saw the configuration this year, but instead of having the rink in the middle, they kind of put the rink in the right field corner. And I think it made for some really cool views, really good sight lines because the fans were right on top of the rink there. It looked like a great place to play hockey. And I'm bummed out that not everybody had the opportunity to do so.
Yeah. I mean, as one guy who had an outdoor game canceled, it definitely sucks. So, you know, really feeling for those guys, especially, I mean, they got to play at a friggin' baseball stadium. You know, ours was at some rinky dink, you know, just outdoor pond next to a ski resort. So not even a ski resort, more just like a hill. So yeah, but I got to say though, it was crazy. I had completely forgotten that UNC was playing Virginia Tech the other night. And I'm just like opening Hulu and it's Ohio State versus Michigan State in Fenway. And then right next to it is UNC Virginia Tech at Truist Field on ESPN Plus. It was awesome. It was so cool to see those two right next to each other. Should have taken a pic.
I want a side-by-side. Maybe we'll put this on our Instagram later this week, but the Jersey game on the club hockey side in Charlotte was so much better than the Jersey game at the frozen confines when the Big Ten teams got together. I loved App State in South Carolina going with the pinstripe jerseys. I thought maybe Michigan could have taken a page out of their book and gone with pinstripe jerseys instead of those atrocious maize jerseys that they went with. I thought Ohio State had pretty cool ones. But other than that, I think it was not much to write home about in terms of the college hockey teams playing in Wrigley.
Well, if I'm correct, Michigan State just wore their regular jerseys.
Yeah.
It's nothing special.
Yeah, they did the NC State move. They just, hey, we got good-looking jerseys. We're going to wear them.
Yeah, and then Notre Dame trying to be UNC. Yeah, I mean, it's a light blue jersey. It's Maine. It's Maine. You know, a little throwback there for those.
I called that one the Instagram jersey. Like, I think they were just trying to go viral with a jersey and be unique. And it's, you know, you're Notre Dame. You got to run the ball. All right. Give us a script Notre Dame jersey. Okay. Wear brown pants and brown gloves or something like that. But keep it simple. So it was a good event, and all around, anytime we can get some outdoor college hockey, we're in for a treat. But we were also in for a treat in DC. This is an event originally thought we'd be able to make work and all get together for, but again, just around the holidays, it gets too crazy. But Army beats Navy for the third year in a row. Army gets to sing second. They dominate in a 7-3 win at Capital One Arena. The football team was not so lucky the next day for Army, but a good game nonetheless. And it's funny, if looking back 3 years ago, when how big of a deal it was when Army beat Navy in this matchup in hockey. And you thought it might have been just a fluke thing that we won't see again, because at that point, you know, Navy had gone to Nationals X amount of years in a row. And now Army's on a three-game heater in the series. So I'm looking forward to another rendition of this one, because, you know, now we're getting into Michigan-Ohio State territory next year for this one. There's going to be guys at Army who have never lost to Navy before. So I think that'll make for an interesting matchup when those two teams hit the ice again. But there's some more news we'll kind of rattle off here since the last time we talked. Five additional teams have been approved for ACHA Men's Division I beginning next season. They are Cincinnati, Kentucky, Michigan Flint, Central Michigan, and Siena Heights. So a couple of bigger name schools, a couple of M3 schools, and a very new school. Our friends now at Siena Heights, they are starting a ACHA M1 program and an ACHA Women's 1 program. I believe they are taking over the hockey teams from Concordia Ann Arbor, who is cutting athletics next year. So a new name in the ACHA world, but some familiar faces making the jump to M1. I think Cincinnati and Kentucky makes perfectly good sense. I know they haven't had, you know, Kentucky went to Nationals a couple of years ago. Cincinnati has had some down years recently, but I think those are just two bigger brands that, you know, like Collins noted, we haven't really talked since the whole CHL ruling came in, but I think there's going to be a time and place for these big name schools to really take off at the ACHA level. And so I think having a team like Cincinnati and Kentucky, who year in and year out are well-run programs. Cincinnati has a gorgeous locker room. Kentucky, maybe not the best rink, but they make it work, and they have, you know, the third jerseys, the helmets, the gloves. They have everything that goes with being a top-end club hockey team. So I really like those picks. I think Central Michigan could really do well in this, you know, given how many great teams there are in the state of Michigan in the ACHA. And I'm interested to see Siena Heights, a new team on the block, as well as Michigan Flint, who's been having a great season so far this year in M3. And it's always interesting when maybe those smaller schools, especially the satellite ones, get to the top level of the ACHA. You know, can they take advantage of being a small school that maybe gets more funding than a big school who's like completely unaffiliated? It'll be interesting to see there, but we'll keep moving on. We had the ACHA Big Classic, and we had the ACHA Chicago Classic. UNLV takes care of business in the Chicago Classic. They went 3-0 in the tournament. The first time they did this, Joe Caprio, he does a phenomenal job of running this one, but they did like bracket style, and it was elimination, and UNLV ended up winning it. This year, it's just you play your games and then you get out of there, but UNLV went 3-0, so we can kind of claim them the winner. The inaugural ACHA Big Classic was a collection of Big Ten teams, M2 and M3, all going to Chicago playing a showcase. We had Iowa defeat Wisconsin in the title game for M2. And then similar to M1, there was no title game, but we had Notre Dame going 3-0 against the other M3 Big Ten schools. Notre Dame, not a traditional Big Ten school, but they do compete in the Big Ten in NCAA Division I. So they got to go to the tournament, and that gave the M3 level four teams. And they complete the weekend sweep, which was really cool to see. And Fitzy, I'm sure the boys, it must have been a good trip for the guys, you know, some different corners of the Midwest, and everybody getting to go to Chicago before the holiday break.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to try to go down and catch a few games, and it was like the first big snow of this season hit. So I was like, oh, I was just thinking of all these kids coming down on, you know, on their buses and lugging their gear into the rink, and got the snow on the shoes and wet socks going into the rink. And I always in the moment I was like, this, you know, I'm not going to miss this. I miss it now. I was sitting here and, you know, thinking about just all that going on. So I'm sure they all had a blast. Indiana let me down, but yeah, it's I'm sure they all had a good time. A lot of people from around the those, you know, types of schools, Indiana, Michigan, any of those Big Ten, a lot of them are from the area. So I'm sure a lot of family and friends got to come out too.
Yeah, it's a good point. Especially, I think it was the week before everybody broke for Thanksgiving too, so it makes for an easier time to people for people that maybe get off work and leave early and go catch a game, or, you know, gives everybody a week, an excuse to go to Chicago for the weekend. So a great job by Joe Caprio. And again, we appreciate everything he does to help the ACHA put on these events. And a couple more headlines, just kind of looking through some of the stuff we posted on social media, some of the bigger hits we had. Maryville M3, they scored 5 unanswered goals in a comeback win in overtime against Missouri State. That was a really cool one to watch the highlights of. They went down by a bunch of goals, and then just to get a couple in the second, couple in the third, and then to win in overtime was really cool to see. And again, the headline, 5 unanswered goals and winning in overtime is a tall task, but a bit of a rivalry game and a team that maybe we've talked down on a little bit this year. And honestly, we're just kind of surprised that they're still operating at this point, but a tip of the cap to the UNC Broncos, because they've been having a down year. They've got a slim roster and they are still going. I think this is a program when they're back at the top of the ACHA in a couple of years, we're going to look back on this season and these guys that kind of kept it all together. But who, you know, who's been having an up year is the Oklahoma, and UCO still owns the Sooners. They swept them in the battle at the Bronco Barn. And it was really, really cool to see, because, you know, Oklahoma's having a really good year, UCO kind of having a down year, and UCO still just able to take care of business.
Okay, I'm glad you caught that, because you said the UNC Broncos. Just like I said, Fenway instead of Wrigley.
Hey, we're dusting off the mics. Dusting off the mics. All right, we're getting back into – it's like, you know, hey, like maybe that game I don't even know where I'm going with that.
It's the same. I hadn't skated in 8 months,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It was a tough one.
We're
it's
here.
A tough one.
We're here. All right. So we got to keep going. We're going to push through here. But another big headline was Arizona, 7th consecutive Cactus Cup. They play a best of 7 series against ASU every season, and just handling business. Like, we're first semester, we're already handing out the Cactus Cup. They won game 3 in a shootout, and then they won game 4 in convincing fashion. I want to say it was like 6-0, 7-0 on home ice, which was pretty cool to see. And, another cool tidbit here, we had a cool jersey release. Penn State paid tribute to their club hockey days with a cool throwback jersey. The jersey itself was designed based on a 1940s design when Penn State had varsity hockey originally. And then they had a nice little tribute to the club team. They did the logo on the pant shell was the logo from the original Penn State club hockey team, which just some absolute characters in this original Penn State hockey team photo. I don't know if you guys were able to check this out, but it's so funny, like, looking back at maybe just the guys from the 80s and the 70s just looking like they're 40 years old in college, just the receding hairlines, big old beards, the Cooper pants, the old goalie waffles. It is just such a great photo, and I'm glad we could dig that up, and I'm glad Penn State could pay tribute to those original club guys who brought Penn State hockey back to campus. But before we keep going here, I wanted to make sure we paid tribute to longtime Calvin head coach Mike Petruzma, who passed away since we last recorded. The ACHA community mourns the loss. He was the longtime Calvin University hockey director and head ACHA M1 coach. A native of Georgetown, Ontario, he guided Calvin for 28 years, amassed a win-loss record of 520 wins, 210 losses, 37 ties. He led Calvin ACHA teams at the Division 1, 2, and 3 levels, including an M3 national championship in 2004. He will be deeply missed, and we send our condolences to the Petruzma family and the Calvin hockey community. Didn't have the opportunity to meet Mike, but you know, saw him around the rink at a couple of the national tournaments, and he was a guy who people said, man, if you want stories about the ACHA, you got to go to Mike, because, you know, he's just seen so much in the ACHA. And it was really cool to see Calvin went on, you know, the very next weekend. I believe they went to the service for Coach Petruzma in the morning, and then that afternoon they won the Grand Rapids Sports Hall of Fame tournament. And so I'm sure Mike was watching down on them, but we wanted to send our condolences since, you know, we hadn't recorded in a while. I know that was back in November, but I'm sure that the Calvin team will rally on, and wishing them the best of luck the rest of the way this season. Got a lot of stick taps here. Like I said, it's been a while here, but we got to start. We had a goalie goal. I don't know if any, I I checked the bingo card before we started recording. I don't think anybody had goalie goal on here. And it wasn't like, I don't know if you guys saw in the ECHL the other day, there was a goalie goal, but it was just like it hit the goalie's pad and then the other team scored on their own net. Like, we had a full-on goalie goal. Stick Taps FAU goalie Rocco Bruno, all-time name. The FAU goalie scored a goalie goal in November's game against Tampa, which was great to see. I want to also give Stick Taps to the city of Prescott Valley, Arizona, a sellout crowd of 5,000 to watch GCU defeat Arizona. No Coyotes anymore, so people of Arizona rallying around ACHA. I could get behind that. GCU having a great year. Arizona always in the mix, and the people turned out in Prescott Valley for this one. Fitzy, I was looking too. I mean, I don't want to tease too much of the bingo board conversation, but you had somebody hitting the Michigan on there. We've seen a bunch of Michigans, but I've never seen an overtime winner Michigan, and that came courtesy of Thomas Konkowski at Farmingdale. He hit the Michigan in their overtime winner against St. Bonaventure, so we got to give him Stick Taps to that. Talked about the boys at UCO. One of the legends, though, is Vitaly Mikhailov. We want to give him Stick Taps for signing with the Tulsa Oilers in the ECHL. Not a big deal. I just had the boys at Cal. We gave them a shout-out. I think they're like 21-0 to start the season here. They've been playing great hockey, and they're buzzing. They're getting the Calgarithm behind Cal hockey, which I think it's only a matter of time before they go viral doing something here. So hopefully those boys keep rolling. I want to give a shout out to Florida State alum Jason Prute. He dressed as the E-Bug the other night for the Bloomington Thunder in the ECHL. He works in ticket sales for them. And so, hey, we need a practice goalie. He gets the call up to be the practice goalie. And then he dressed as the backup in the game that night and got to go out for warmups, which was pretty cool. Cool seeing an AAU to ECHL E-Bug. And then we got to give a shout out to our guy at Penn State, John Seifarth, who we talked about him over the summer, I think. ACHA M2 guy gets signed to be on the NCAA team. They have some injuries in net. He's got a start against Colgate. He goes 2-0 on the weekend and then ends up on SportsCenter top 10 in his NCAA debut, making a paddle save and getting the win for the Nittany Lions. So he's a guy we're going to hope to get on in the future here, and that should be a really good interview, getting his journey from the ACHA to playing at Penn State, which is pretty cool. But without further ado, we're going to turn over to this week's guest, the man behind the bench for the UNLV Skating Rebels, and get the recap on their upset win over Denver and where that program is heading next. But we talked to UNLV associate head coach Nick Raboni. We're pleased to be joined this week by UNLV associate head coach Nick Raboni. Coach, welcome to the Hockey House podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We were joking beforehand, we got to get you guys a PR team or something, because the social media team has been working overtime for you guys the last couple weeks.
They have. Shout out to Megan Roma and Kayla Fossey. Those two, they crush it for us, and super proud of them. And we're glad we have them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I can only imagine what you guys have been through in the last couple weeks. You know, it seems like with a program like yours, there's something new every day. And I'm sure this was something that you guys had hoped would happen eventually. And maybe it happened a little sooner than you thought. But walk us through kind of the reaction to you guys beating Denver and what you guys have kind of been through in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say it's, I don't want to say it's been a long time coming, but we've been trying to get these NCAA games for a few years now. And Coach Anthony Greener's done a great job of reaching out to coaches and scheduling these D1 games. You know, I think our first ones were actually in 2022. We played Denver the first time, we lost 10-0. And then we played Alaska Anchorage three times that year. We lost 7-0 and 2-1 and 2-1. So, you know, we definitely made some adjustments from the first Denver game and the first Alaska game into the second two Anchorage games. And then we actually didn't get any games last year. And then this year, you know, fortunately we got a couple versus Lindenwood. Played one pretty tight game there that we were happy with. And then moving into the Denver game and Colorado College game, you know, we kind of knew how we wanted to play. You know, you kind of understand you're going to be outmatched from a skill perspective, but you really want to make it tough defensively. Like, obviously, they have a ton of speed, so we really want to make them go through layers, right? So I think that was a big part of our kind of preparation for that. And, you know, everything just kind of fell into place for the Denver game. We got up early. Our goalie was playing unbelievable. Theirs was playing pretty much the opposite. And I think that obviously that's a big confidence for your guys after the first period being up 3-1. And even then, you know, we're looking as a staff and we're like, okay, we know they're dangerous. Like, they can turn it on at any moment. And then the second period rolls around. And I actually think that was probably our best period. We were really good defensively, killed off a couple big power plays that they had. We wound up scoring a couple times. Now we're going in 5-1, and that's when, you know, it's kind of setting in like, hey, you know, we can do this. Like, there's nothing stopping us here. You know, we have all the pieces in place. We have the team to do it. So let's just go out and finish the job. And obviously it didn't exactly turn out exactly the way we wanted in the third period, but you know what, you find a way. And at the end of the day, like, I'm super proud of our guys, and you know, they really bought into what we're doing with the program, and just exciting times for sure.
Yeah. And the reaction afterwards, again, I was joking with some of my buddies. I went to the Bruins game that night. I had a friend in town, and all of a sudden I get a text. It's like, are you watching this game? And I look at the score. I'm like, 5-1. I was like, this has got to be a typo. Like, it's 5-1 Denver, right? That's what we're talking about. And then I look, it's 5-1 you guys. And you know, it's kind of the same reaction you had. It's like, the result was there. We got the result we wanted. Maybe we didn't end up in the path we wanted there, but it was so cool to see the reaction from the hockey world. Did you get any crazy texts afterwards? Did anybody reach out after the fact that you maybe is something you're going to remember down the line?
I mean, after the game, like, Coach Anthony, myself, Coach Colin Robin, we probably each had like 100 text messages each. It was pretty insane for sure. But I think that, like, getting a text from Greg Powers is obviously always great. Like, Greg's just a huge ambassador for the ACHA. And he's big mentor of, I'd say, myself and Anthony, and he's helped us out a lot with the program. So just hearing from him, like, you know, he'll always text us before the D1 games and saying like, hey, you know, you guys got this, like, you know, things like that. So, like, just getting text from him, and I would say some of the other ACHA coaches, you know, those are great coaches out there. There's so many great coaches in our league. There's so many great players in our league. Like, it could have been any program, right? But it, fortunately, you know, it was us. And I think that, you know, the outpour that we received afterwards, like, I honestly couldn't imagine it. I couldn't imagine the publicity it's kind of gotten and where it's gone. But I'm happy for not only our program, but the whole league, just because, like, kudos to everybody that's, you know, I would say, put their blood, sweat, and tears into making their program. And there's just so many, like I said, so many good coaches out there that could have been in our situation as well.
That's pretty cool that Coach Powers reached out. And that kind of leads me into my next question. You know, do you think the result of this game and you guys, you know, pulling it off against Denver, you had two tighter games with Lindenwood and the game against Colorado College. Like, do you think maybe other NCAA Division I teams are seeing the result against Denver and being like, well, man, I don't want to put them on our schedule if they have a chance at beating us? Or do you think this is going to open up the door, maybe having somebody like Greg Powers in your corner who's like, hey, no, these ACHA exhibitions are good for everyone?
You know, I think it should open up the door that all these, you know, these exhibition games with ACHA programs should happen more often with the NCAA. I don't think that it should always be, you know, the Canadian universities, especially because when you look at like the NCAA programs, they want to bring in, you know, bigger names, right? And I think that there's some bigger names in the ACHA that would, you know, I think help draw them a bigger crowd on those exhibition games. It also opens up opportunities for more eyes on programs in our league that, you know, maybe one day they could make the jump, whether it's, you know, us or maybe University of Arizona or whoever it may be. But I think that this really opens up the door for more of these exhibition style games for sure. I don't think it should discourage anything. You know, I don't think you're going to see results like this all the time by any means, but I do think that there's so much talent in our league that kind of falls through the cracks, and like, our league's only going to get better too. So I would love to see more of these exhibition games.
Yeah. One that comes to mind, you know, mentioned like some of these rivalry games, right? Like, ASU hosted Arizona last season and it didn't go the ACHA's way. I think it was a 16-0 route by ASU, but it's like, they sold out Mullet Arena, right? People are fired up because they want to see U of A come to town for that matchup. And I'm sure, you know, teams down the road, some of those bigger names, if they get a chance to do these exhibitions, it'll draw similar crowds.
Yeah. And I guess to kind of touch on that a little bit too, you know, there might be somebody at the University of Arizona that says, you know what, that's not acceptable by our minds. Like, we need to put some more resources and some funding into our program to get it where we want to get it. So I think that, like, from that perspective, you can look at it both ways.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And then I know you mentioned Greener is kind of the one who's scheduling these. Is that, you know, are you cold calling programs, reaching out, or is he kind of building, you know, like you mentioned, the relationship with Greg Powers probably helps when you're trying to get games like that on the schedule?
It's a little bit of both. Like, we've done some cold calls. We've had coaches reach out to us. So, like, fortunately, our program does a great job of raising funds to be able to play these games. I know not every team in our league is in that position, but you know, there's some people in our corner on our hockey board that, you know, have done a great job in fundraising to put us in position to play these games too. So they, I think, just to answer your question, it's definitely a little bit of both for sure.
And I'm glad you brought it up, you know, having to fundraise for these two, because I think a lot of people might have seen this matchup and assumed it was like a college football situation where Denver threw you guys, you know, a bag to come out and play them. Pretty cool. Like, you know, it's just another game on the schedule. It's an exhibition that you guys obviously have to, you know, accommodate travel plans for.
Yeah, exactly. I think that, you know, like I mentioned earlier, our guys, you know, normally they get this time off, right? They, as soon as those December 13th, 14th games are done, we're normally off until January 2nd. But, you know, at the beginning of the year, we said, hey, we're going to play these games. Like, is everybody on board? And they're like, yeah, coach, we're on board. So they sacrificed those extra couple weeks that they could be spending with their family. And they're, you know, they're practicing hard here. Like, we put them through it for sure, both on and off the ice. Like, we're doing some stuff as a team. We get that extra time together, which is great. But it's just nice to see their hard work and their dedication pay off.
Yeah, such a cool story. And I kind of want to rewind here and kind of go back to the beginning of your story. You played roller hockey at UNLV. Kind of walk me through, you know, your college decision, how you ended up at UNLV and playing on the roller hockey team.
Yeah, so I didn't really play much ice hockey after like 14. I wanted to get more into, you know, football and wrestling and doing some stuff at my school. But in the summers, I was still playing some roller and having some fun with friends and things like that. And then by the time I graduated high school, you know, I just was like, hey, this is fun. You know, I had some friends that were playing on the roller team, and I'm just going to kind of ride the wave with this for a bit. And then, you know, we had some fun. Like, our team was solid team. My senior year, we played in the national championship game. So, like, fun stuff, super, super happy and proud of, like, what I did with that program, both as a player and then coached it for a couple of years after. And then after that, got into kind of wanting to get more into the ice hockey scene and coaching. I had a love for coaching, and I knew that, you know, coaching rollers can only take you so far, right? So decided to hop on with one of my friends that was coaching the midget AA, AAA team here in town. Did that for 2 years, and then got a call from the team president at the time, Arturo Castro, saying that, you know, UNLV was looking to make a coaching change. And that's when they brought Anthony and I in for an interview. And I had known Anthony a little bit, so we both go in for this interview, and we're talking to the players, we're talking about our vision and you know, where we could see this program. And, you know, at the end of the day, they decided that we were going to be the right fit for them, and we're happy they did, because, you know, nine years later, it's, the program looks a whole lot different now than it did back then.
Yeah, I can imagine it. Was there a welcome to the ACHA moment in that first coaching season when, you know, you learned maybe more than you thought you would in your first year?
Definitely. When I look back, I mean, UNLV, when they first started in 2005, you know, they had a pretty solid team. Really good coach came in, Rob Pauline, who had been, you know, here in Vegas for a while. And, you know, he had played at a high level, coached at a high level. And, you know, when Anthony was there, he had the program moving. And unfortunately, they hadn't made nationals yet, but they had won a ton of games. And then Rob left, and the program, you know, it took a step backwards for sure. So by the time that Anthony and I came in, I think there was only 5 or 6 players left that had been here the previous season. So we kind of had to do like a quick overhaul. You know, we got a lot of local guys to sign on that, you know, had some skill and played some juniors. We brought in one player from the BCHL. And in that first year, we actually went 0-3 to start. And Utah had a very established ACHA team at the time, a D2 team. And they kicked the shit out of us, to be honest with you, at the Las Vegas Ice Center for 2 games. And then we go to Long Beach State and we drop that one. So we started 0-3. And at Long Beach State, you know, I think it's a fun rink to play at. But the crazy thing is, like, the fans are right above the benches. So, like, we had people, like, pouring beer on us. And I'm like, okay, that was my welcome to the ACHA moment right there for sure. But then we turned it around that year, and we came within one game of making nationals. And then the next year at D2, you know, we have a great year. We make the national tournament. And then the following year, we move up to ACHA D1.
It's crazy. And you gotta imagine, you know, a pivotal moment in this is the Golden Knights coming to town and kind of them putting hockey on the map for maybe people. I mean, hockey was on the map in Las Vegas to start, a long history of pro teams in the area. Like you mentioned, UNLV club hockey was off and running at that point, but maybe a lot of outsiders didn't know that this could be a hockey town. Were there any early signs, maybe before the NHL days, that Vegas was a hockey town?
Well, growing up here, the hockey community was really small, but everybody knew everyone. And we had some pretty good coaching here, some players at my birth year and, you know, a little bit earlier and a little bit later, you know, went on to play Division I hockey, some pro hockey. So we, for having not a lot of players, we had some really successful ones and some guys that were pretty talented. And then obviously, you know, when the Golden Knights come to town, that's actually the first year that we make the jump from ACHA D2 to D1. The facilities change. That's a big thing. You know, they helped us out in building us a locker room at the practice facility, a coach's office. And those are the real things that, you know, you really need to elevate your program. You can't really have guys bringing their gear back and forth and expect to have a competitive ACHA D1 team. So I think that that was a really big thing for us. And then obviously just the growth of hockey, our fan base tripled overnight. It seemed like, you know, there became standing room only crowds at our games. And the hockey community just like dove all into, our program, to the Knights. And I think what was really cool about it was, you know, we started doing a lot with youth hockey and the Mike programs and things like that. And I mean, that tripled overnight too. So it was just really cool for our guys to be able to kind of embed themselves with youth hockey as well.
I think it's pretty cool. I had this on here and was going to ask you about it, but I know you just touched on it a bit, but like, talk about like maybe the planning process of City National. Did the Golden Knights just say like, hey, we're going to make sure there's a room built for UNLV? Did they, you know, ask you guys, hey, is this something you would want? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah. So basically when, you know, when the Knights were planning on coming to town and they were doing like the Vegas Wants Hockey kind of experiment where, you know, they were basically selling season tickets to a team that didn't exist yet, but they wanted to get a feel for it. You know, we had reached out to the people that were running that at the time and expressed our interest in being a part of it. And basically they were all on board. And so it was kind of in the works from day one of them coming here that they were going to have a locker room for us and a coach's office there. And like I said, just grateful. They've been unbelievable to work with, you know, till this day. Obviously our doors basically are right next to each other, the Golden Knights locker room and ours. And, you know, we're fortunate as a staff to be able to work with some of their staff and just bounce ideas off them. For me, you know, Ryan Craig, who's the Henderson Silver Knights coach, he's been with the organization since day one. And like, for me personally, like, he's a guy you could just pick up and dial at any time and he's going to answer your call and you can chat hockey. And, you know, those are huge resources for any program. Both not only just the locker room and coach's office, but just the connections in general.
Yeah, it's cool to see. I remember, you know, in the early days of the Golden Knights, you know, following some of these Twitter accounts with, you know, gathering up the fan base and just being like, wow, like, these people really want hockey. And then, you know, sure enough, in that first season, it really takes off. But I think a pivotal moment in that first season is what happened on October 1st. And you were in attendance actually at the Country Music Festival. You actually took a bullet to the chest. Like, walk me through how crazy of a 10 days that was and maybe what you were thinking at the time. And then maybe looking back on it afterwards, kind of how the whole Vegas community rallied together.
Yeah. So like, I really wasn't going to go that last night actually. So I'd gone to the concert the last 2 days and my brother, he was like, hey, you know, I'm going to go the last day. Why don't you come? And I'm like, all right, I'll go. So kind of zipped over there actually after a men's league game. And I was maybe 100 yards from the stage. And all of a sudden, like, you know, everything's fine. And you just hear like this clacking noise, kind of look around. Jason Aldean's still playing. And then all of a sudden, like, he stops playing. You hear the clacks again. But, you know, then it stops and everybody's still looking around. And then, you know, I kind of turn to face where I think they're coming from, which is Mandalay Bay. And they start again. And then, bam, like, you know, I get hit. And at that point, like, blood is coming from my nose and my mouth. And I'm like, all right. Now, I've seen this in the movies before. Like, this doesn't wind up well for guys like me. But fortunately, like, my brother's a paramedic EMT and he was there that night. And so he grabbed me. I had some buddies grab me. You know, we exit the concert and he basically just gets like a first aid kit that has some plastic wrap on it, puts it over the gunshot wound, kind of puts the bandages around it. Wasn't sure, you know, if it hit my lung, if I had a collapsed lung, whatever, but he knew that obviously we had to kind of get that taken care of. And then thank God there was just so many great people there, like including my brother, that stuck around, saved a ton of lives. And, you know, for me, like, I was lucky. I got on one of the first ambulance, get to the hospital and they're triaging everyone. And they're like, hey, we got to get you in right now. So get in there as fast as I can. Amazing doctors, you know, they take care of me and I get into surgery pretty quickly. And, you know, at that point, I don't know, you know, get in and get out. And a couple days later, wake up out of a coma and they're just like, you know, you were pretty close to kind of not making it. And I didn't really realize that the whole time. I'm like, I'm going to be fine. You know, like right away when you get hit, you're obviously in shock a bit. But by the time I got to the hospital, I was just like, okay, we'll be okay. But pretty wild, the whole experience for sure. Wound up being in the ICU for about 6 days after that, 7 days, and just the hospital in general for like 10. But during that time in the hospital, it was just really cool to see the community come together. You know, the Vegas Golden Knights were in there. You know, there was like Jason Aldean visiting the hospital. But I mean, just the community in general rallied. And then for me personally, like I felt like I had the whole hockey community behind me, not just Vegas, but like nationally, globally, like had tons of people reaching out. Like I just am so thankful for everybody in the hockey community that supported me that for, you know, that time. But when you look at the Golden Knights aspect of it, you know, there was a lot of people that were really reeling from it and they didn't really know how to cope. So being able to go to the Golden Knights games kind of gave them a 3 hours of just like, you know, pure bliss and just, you know, kind of take that whole situation out of the equation for that time, right? They just wanted to focus on that. And then obviously the Knights, like they were winning, you know, winning solves a lot and people rally around that. And they were really Vegas's team. They weren't, you know, they weren't a transplant team. They were an expansion team, right? So Vegas born was like the big kind of the motto behind it. And people just rallied and it was just awesome to see.
I got to ask, I was reading an article earlier today. It mentioned that, you know, you were back playing men's league in March. Like how good did that feel like that first time back out on the ice?
Yeah, I mean, it was awesome. Like I said, for me, like my recovery process started really quickly, like very fortunate to be good mentally. And I had a lot to look forward to. And the main thing was like getting back to coaching and the team. So I did my best to do everything I needed to do to get back on the ice because there's only so much coaching you do from the bench, especially at practices and things like that. But it felt great to get back on the ice when I did. Obviously, you're a little hesitant at first, that's for sure. You know, maybe going into the corner and whatnot. But I think, like I said, I really, really enjoyed like just getting back with the guys and just getting back into the normal routine because there was so much kind of craziness going on that you're just ready to like move on. And I think hockey was a big part of that.
You know, it's pretty well documented the success that the Golden Knights had that year. Was there a learning curve for the ACHA guys? And, you know, I know you mentioned that was the first season in Division One.
Huge learning curve. I mean, I look back at myself as a coach, and Anthony can attest to this. You know, when we were moving from D2 to D1, our thing was like, okay, we need talent. Like we need to get guys here that are going to be able to compete at this level. And we'll be the first to tell you, we didn't really do our due diligence on, you know, making sure that we had the right players here that were here for the right reasons. But we had talented group by all intents and purposes. Like, you know, if they were here for the right reasons, I think we could have made deep runs early on, but the culture wasn't there. And it took us a couple of years to kind of develop like our really identity, what we wanted, what type of player we wanted, what leagues we were going to recruit from. And then calling, you know, previous coaches and previous players that knew these players, like we had to really dive in to find out if they're good human beings. Like that's number one. So there was a big learning curve there for us. And then I think like kind of after COVID, we had a really good recruiting class and, you know, we knew we had a good team at the time. We didn't know how good. And then we kind of, you know, I think that like the big turning, like cornerstone for the program was like 2022 or 2021, the year after COVID, we would go to the Chicago Classic and we'd play like Adrian, Minot, Liberty back to back to back. And, you know, we win all those games. We win the tournament. That's when I knew like, okay, this is the type of player we want. This is the recruiting class we want. Like these are the guys that are here for the right reasons. And then the last few years, you know, we've kind of built on that success.
I'm really curious, you know, I know nobody has the answer right now, but I think we're all on the same page in terms of how much the college hockey landscape is about to change. I'd love to know, like when you first started recruiting, what leagues were you looking at to get guys from? And now when you're recruiting, like I can only imagine right now, given, you know, the new CHL rules and the NIL rules in college hockey, like what leagues you're recruiting from now, and especially after maybe a win over a team like Denver?
Yeah. So, you know, when I look at tier three hockey, I do think there's some strong players in that league. You know, we have some players on our team that are there. But I do think that if you're looking to really compete at the ACHA D1 level, I mean, you really need to find like those tier two guys. And I think that that's super important, is to have that talent and have that skill. You know, it's not a knock on the tier three level by any means, because like I said, I do think that there's some talented players there and we're obviously still looking at those leagues. However, when I, a good example is, I think the year COVID happened, we didn't obviously have a year at all, but the ACHA still had a tournament at the D1 level. So I go to the NA3 showcase and I go to the showcase and I'm watching some players, and there's some good players there for sure. But then I pop over to the tournament and I'm watching Minot and Lindenwood and Liberty and the teams that, like, you know, we're trying to beat and that, like, strive to compete with. And I look at their rosters and it's just like, these are all tier two guys. I'm like, you know, if we're going to compete and win, these are the types of players we need to have. Like, that was like, I called Coach Greener right away and I was like, hey, we're going to talk to some of these tier three guys, but we need to focus on the North American Hockey League. We need to focus on the Alberta Junior League. Like, you know, for us being on the Western part of North America, obviously, like the BCHL and the AJA and, you know, things like that. Those are pretty good leagues in Canada, great leagues in Canada, obviously, that we're going to try and recruit from. And the North American League is another one that we heavily strive to continue to sell our program to those guys. And I think with the way college hockey's changing, it becomes that much more difficult for probably these North American guys to get those NCAA looks, which is where kind of we should jump in. And that's kind of our goal and our vision and type of guy that we want here.
And to kind of add on to that, you know, if you have a tier two guy and they've got the skill level, like, what is something in their character that you're looking for? Because I think that's a big part of the college hockey recruiting process, that maybe kids think, oh, hey, I play in this league, I'm guaranteed a certain spot here. What are some things that you and Greener are looking for that fits the UNLV culture?
Great question. They have to be good teammates. That's like number one for us. You know, like, who are they in the locker room? Who are they in the community? If they're not a good teammate, like, and there's any red flag there, we like stop right then and there. That's it. It doesn't matter, you know, how many points they have or whatever it may be. Like, we just will never sacrifice it. We've gone through, you know, a couple of years, we've had great teams, but it's just one guy that was just a cancer and like spreads like wildfire. So, like our group now, we love our group. Like, you know, we do our mid-semester meetings and everybody talks about how close the locker room is. And we just feel like that's a really, you know, you need to be successful. So obviously being a good teammate and then how hard they work. Like, we always want speed. We always want guys that can get up and down the ice, but we're really big on compete, like really big on team defense. Like, those are things that we stress heavily. Like, if guys don't defend well, you know, that's a little bit of, I don't want to say red flag, but something that we would consider like, okay, hey, how much time and effort do we want to put into helping them defend better, you know? But I would say that if you look at those things, it's always going to be character, work ethic, and then, you know, grades. You got to have the grades to do it. And then the last one is execution. So those are probably the big four.
You mentioned, you know, this year's group, you certainly started on an interesting note. Like, right off the jump, you're going to St. Louis to play Lindenwood. Walk me through maybe the preparation for that series. How is it different? It's an NCAA exhibition, but it's starting off your season. And then you're starting the season in a place where you finished last season, at, you know, where the national tournament will be played once again in St. Louis.
So we had a huge senior class last year. You know, we had 10 seniors graduate that won a ton of games here. You know, they'd been to a couple Final Fours. They'd been to a national championship game. You know, so we needed to make sure now that like the freshman class and the transfers that we have coming in are really bought into our vision and everything like that. So finding the right guys, always number one. And then also, how do you embed those guys into your program? And we have great leadership. You know, I look back to all of our returners, our freshmen that are turning to sophomores, our sophomores that are going to be juniors and juniors and seniors. We put the onus on them to say, hey, you know, this is your program. We're just here to kind of show you the way. But at the end of the day, you're the one that's going to hold these guys accountable. You're the ones that are going to be the one that really drives what we're doing here. And those guys have just done an amazing job. Like, I'm so proud of our captains, our leadership, and all the upperclassmen of what they've done for bringing these 10, 12 new players in and really getting them on board right away. So we've had a lot of success in St. Louis. So that was one of the things that we always feel comfortable going there. Going to Centene, obviously a beautiful rink. Like, we're staying at the same hotel. We're doing all the same things that we do for nationals. So I think that, like, for our returning guys, it felt, you know, hey, this is where we're supposed to be. But Lindenwood, I mean, for a team that's been at D1 now, like, you know, they gave us an ass beat in the first game. It's 5-1, but it didn't really feel like 5-1. And then the second night, you know, we make some adjustments and we play a little bit differently. And I think our guys got used to the speed of the game. I think that's the biggest thing when you look at the ACHA D1 level to like the NCAA D1 level, like the speed on how these guys do things, it's insane, right? They're on you quick. Like, you don't have any time and space to make plays. So it takes a minute to really adjust to that. And I think that was kind of the difference between game one and game two versus Lindenwood. But we're happy we got to play those games, and we love going to St. Louis, that's for sure.
Now I got to ask, I asked about game one, I asked about game two. I saw, 6-2 loss to Arizona State in game three. Like, was that a wake-up call to your guys? Like, hey, just because we played Lindenwood tight doesn't mean we can just walk through any ACHA team?
It was for sure. And we don't really make a lot of excuses, but we were definitely pretty banged up after that Lindenwood series. We had some guys that were injured, and but for us, it's always next man up mentality. So I think that we had 6 or 7 guys out of the lineup for that first Arizona State game. But at the end of the day, they're still a good program, and they took it to us for sure. And then the second night, it was a wake up call for us, and we came out ready to go. And I think we had one more guy that got healthy, which is a big thing. I think it was one of our defensemen. And when you look back at that, anybody can beat anybody on a given night in our league. Like, we're always telling our guys, it doesn't matter who we're playing. We have to bring our best. And I think the bullseye got a little bit bigger on our back now. So for us, it's like, we don't bring our best, anything can happen. And we know that we're not good enough to win on skill alone.
I'm going to go out on a limb and assume that everyone was healthy for that throttling over Oregon at home, because I think that was another headline that you guys went viral for this season, because people just love, it's one of those things where they see UNLV, they see Oregon, and it's like, oh, wait, these schools have hockey? And then, oh, UNLV is beating up on Oregon pretty badly here.
Yeah, I mean, Oregon's one of those teams that hasn't been in the league very long. I know they're still building. Their coach is a guy he's a really good guy, very passionate. He wants to win. And sometimes it takes a little bit to get going, and I'm hoping that he can continue to kind of, get them in a competitive environment. But once again, for us, it's always foot on the gas. Doesn't matter who we're playing, and we don't want to build bad habits. So that's a big thing for us too.
Yeah, and the clips of City National, regardless of the opponent, it seems like a great place to play. What's maybe something that's your favorite thing about playing a home game in Vegas?
Our crowd is unbelievable. We have some of the best fans in the ACHA. And I think what's really cool about it is we have a very diverse crowd. So we have students that come to the games. We have families. We have season ticket holders. There's so many things to do here in Las Vegas, and people aren't just going to show up. So this is kind of a shout out to our marketing team and everybody that's on our board that, will help us, whether we're putting different ticket packages in place, or we're reaching out to schools and we're getting out in the community. We do a lot of stuff to bring people into the games, and it's a fun place to play. It's a loud place to play. It's not overly big. So when it's rocking, which it seems like every single night these days, when we score first, it's loud. And I feel like it can be pretty intimidating for other teams to come in there and win. And I think that kind of just would show with our home record for sure. But best, like I said, best fans in the ACHA, I'll rival that. I'll argue that to anyone. But we're proud of it. And I think that, hopefully one day we can be in an arena that's a little bigger where we can get some more people too.
You mentioned best fans in the ACHA. I think some people would argue you get to play in the best conference in the ACHA as well, the Western Collegiate Hockey League. Probably one of the toughest schedules. If you look at the teams, that finish at the top of this conference every year, they're usually in the national championship game, the Final Four, making deep runs in the tournament. How does that help your team, and maybe what are some of the experiences that guys get to get when they get to travel to some of these places like Tucson or Colorado and play these big time games?
Yeah, great question. We're really lucky to be in the WCHL. Props to our commissioner who does a great job with the scheduling and everything like that. But when I look at the teams that over the last few years that have really gotten better, the GCUs and U of A is always competitive. Utah has really taken a big step. So props to Morgan and his staff too. They've done a great job. We have a nice little rivalry with them going. But night in and night out, yeah, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You have to bring your best effort. I know GCU just beat Minot a couple weeks ago. So obviously they're in a position now where they're competing, and they obviously made a good run last year. We played them to 2 tight games this year. I know we're looking forward to going down there and playing them for 2 more. Same thing with Utah, but it's a great conference to be in. When I look at the places that we get to go in Tempe and Tucson and Salt Lake City, and we're going to San Diego and things like that. I think that what's great about the ACHA and just our league in general is we really sell the whole experience. We're not just selling the hockey, right? We're selling the school. You know, we're selling, you know, the community, we're selling Las Vegas, and then we're selling, you know, you're going to get to go to some great places that, you know, U of A, it can be intimidating to play there. Like it's tough. It's fun. You know, I think that sometimes when you're selling a guy between ACHA and Division III, you know, it's not hard to do. Sometimes when I look at, when I talk to them about the environments that we get to play in, not only our home one, but also on the road.
Yeah, I mean, it makes for great entertainment too. Like some of these games, these big rivalry games, when we're putting together the Hockey House Pod games of the week, it's like it's easy to throw a WCHL game on the list every week because, you know, they never disappoint. It always comes down to the wire. I'm curious, you know, you've seen, you know, you jumped from the M2 level to the M1. There were some learning curves early on. You know, now you're one of the top teams in one of the toughest conferences. Do you ever see a world where maybe the ACHA has some sort of like super league with the teams at the top? Because I like to think, you know, there's a lot of teams in ACHA M1 now, and it seems like every year the gap is growing larger between that team at the top and the team at the bottom, where opposed to, you know, you look at NCAA Division I where they have, you know, that 60 odd teams, and it seems like anyone could beat everyone on any given night.
Good question. I think that would be tough to do financially for a lot of teams. Like the travel can get a little extensive. I think I would say it's more of a challenge for the league to, personally, I think, I'm just going to throw it out there. I think that sometimes with the M1 level, you know, we're allowing teams to get into that league that maybe should have a little bit more success at the D2 level, or show something that shows they're going to be competitive at the D1 level. I know it seemed like when we were making that jump from D2 to D1, you know, we kind of had to go through hoops to get to that level, and they wanted to see us be competitive at the D2 level, and we had to make nationals, and we did all those things. But I think it should be a little tougher to make that jump from D2 to D1, right? And I also think it should be a little bit of a wake-up call for some of these teams to just say, hey, we're not just going to put any product out there. Like if we're going to try and compete and play at the D1 level, we need to make sure that we're doing our best to get the players that are going to be here to compete, find the finances and resources to do it. But I think like when you look at the top 25, 30 teams at D1, it's really good hockey. And that's what I think I love about the national tournament. You saw how many upsets there were last year. And I think the parity is definitely growing with those top 30 teams. I think the bottom end teams are what I would say can maybe pick it up just a little bit more. I'll just leave it at that, I guess.
No, I totally get what you're saying, because I think a lot of times, you know, somebody goes to their local rink and they're walking out of men's league or whatever. They're there for a junior game, and then they catch maybe a lower end M1 matchup, and they're like, this is club hockey. This is what everyone's telling me about. And it's like, no, like if you know, next weekend, right? If we go and we watch UNLV Jamestown, that is going to rival the pace of a higher end NCAA Division III game. It's just we as a club hockey community should maybe, I don't know, kind of like you were saying, but like I think when people like to hate on club hockey, I just want to show them a game, you know, a top 25 matchup. And it's like, don't argue with me now. Like, check out the pace of this game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think like when you look at the entire landscape of club hockey, I always tell everyone that wants to play college hockey, regardless of the level they're at, there's a level for everybody, right? The Division I level, Division II, and Division III. And Division II and III, like, you know, there's some great places to play. The talent may not be as great as the Division I level, but I think that it's still important to give these guys that opportunity. And I think that's what's great about the ACHA. However, I do think the ACHA D1 should be, you know, the cream of the crop. Like, that should be something that we take very serious. Like, the teams that want to compete at that level, like, if they're not competing at that level, maybe it's time to drop them back down to the D2 level.
You mentioned, you know, having to jump through hoops in the elevation process to M1. I'm curious now, given the success that the team has had over the last couple of years, are there fewer hoops that you find yourself jumping through with the university being a club sport?
I think the relationship with UNLV is a little bit of a tricky one. We don't get a whole lot of support financially from the school. However, I think our objective here is to add a Division II team and potentially a women's team. And I still think like there's a little bit of pushback from the school to do that. And it's really unfortunate, because there's a ton of hockey players here that are coming out of the 18U level that don't really want to play juniors, but they want to play for us. And unfortunately, like, those aren't the guys that are going to be able to compete at the D1 level. However, like I mentioned earlier, like the D2 level would be perfect. So we're still battling a little bit when it comes to that. And I'm hoping that we can kind of push forward. We'd love to add a D2 team for this fall, actually. There's a ton of interest, and I think that it's just great to have here in the city as an option for some of these players.
You mentioned adding a D2 team and potentially looking at adding a women's team. You mentioned his name earlier, but Morgan and the crew at Utah have done a great job over the last couple of years. Like, do you like I look at a team like Utah, like that's exactly what they have. Do you like maybe looking at what other ACHA teams are doing? Like, hey, we should take what they're doing here and bring that to UNLV, or let's take what this team's doing, let's bring that to us. Like, because it is so diverse, right? In the ACHA, you have teams running it, maybe like the Minot States and the Jamestowns, and then you have a whole different crew who like maybe like UNLV, where they're maybe not getting that support from the school.
Always. I mean, we're always looking at what other ACHA teams are doing. We're looking at what other NCAA teams are doing. But from an ACHA perspective, I think that sometimes like a team, like an organization like Utah, who has a Division II and a women's team, it's like a little bit of something that we can have in our pocket when we go to UNLV and say, look at what Utah's doing. They're in a similar situation. Or look what U of A is doing. They've added a women's program. And, you know, Arizona State. It's like all these schools that are in our location geographically that are in our conference are doing this. Like, why aren't we? What's our hold up here? So yes, definitely. I think that, like I said, there's so many tremendous coaches out there that are doing incredible jobs with their programs. Like, there's always something to be learned.
Looking at the UNLV hockey website, notice in your bio, one of your goals is just continue to elevate college hockey in you know, Las Vegas and at UNLV. Like, what is something you would like to do moving forward? What are some of those goals?
I mean, we haven't won a national championship yet. I mean, you know, we've had a lot of success with the program in the last few years, and it's a really hard tournament to win. But, you know, when I talk to Coach Greener and Coach Colin, and we talk about the Denver win, we all can agree, like, the Denver win's great, but our goal is still a national championship. Like, that's something that we, you know, we came so close to last year, and it's a really tough pill to swallow, especially since, you know, last year we thought we had the team to do it. We run into a really hot goalie and a great team in Adrian. So like I said, you kind of need everything to fall in place to win that tournament. So that's number one, I would say. But then number two is something we already touched on, like growing the program, giving more opportunity for some of these local players to play at the D2 level. And then obviously, like, the ultimate goal, like, we'd love to see this program jump to NCAA one day and, you know, provide that kind of, I guess, last piece of the puzzle here for Vegas. You know, we have great youth program. We have some junior hockey. You got the AHL. You know, you got the NHL here, obviously, but we would love to have both NCAA and ACHA one day. I think that would be really cool to do.
I like how you mentioned, you know, the Denver win is great. I imagine, like, you're not going to hang a banner for the Denver win, right? We got to go get that national championship one. So there's going to be a new banner at City National.
Exactly. Like, there's no banner for beating Denver. That's for sure. And, like, you know, from a coaching staff, like, you know, this week we're already prepping for Jamestown. And as soon as our guys get back on the ice on Monday or Tuesday, like, you know, that's our main focus, right? Like, when you look at the rest of the year, I don't know, it's like 10 weeks together left as a team. And this is like the final stretch here. And it's exciting. Like, this is like the best time of year for our program and for all these programs as we make this push towards nationals.
You mentioned last year, you know, the journey that you guys went on, and it was really cool to see the support pour in from, you know, Vegas, the hockey community, right? Like, you're looking at a team like Adrian, like, they're going to the national championship. They've been there before. But then, like, you're on social media and you're seeing these posts from Vegas, and it's like the engagement that you guys were getting and the hockey community truly all eyes on you guys when you're in St. Louis. It was really cool to see. And they always talk about it in like the Stanley Cup playoffs, like, you need to lose to learn, right? And do you think that your team did that last year? I know you mentioned there's so many new faces on this year's team.
I think so. I think, like, we've made a couple deep runs over the last few years, and it like I said, it's hard to swallow, but it also drives, like, your returning guys, like, knowing that you were that close and knowing really what it takes to win. I think, like, our younger guys have really leaned on our older guys this year, and I think they will continue to do that, you know, assuming obviously everything goes to place. We're making the national tournament where we want to be. Like, when we get to nationals, we have a pretty, like, you know, strict schedule on, like, when we arrive there, what it looks like getting there early, getting acclimated. Like, I think, like, when you look at all those things and you take the success we've had in the past and all the pieces we have in place, like, we're confident in this group, and we're hoping to kind of finish the job this year, obviously.
Last question. You got to see kind of what the M2 tournament looks like at Nationals. It looks a little different than the winner go home format of the M1 tournament. Looking back to that first time you guys appeared in the M1 tournament, is there anything that you learned from that tournament that you can use moving forward with this year's team?
I mean, I think the biggest thing, like I kind of briefly touched on, was, you know, you have to put a plan in place, like when you're getting there, what your practices look like. Like, I think part of it was prepping a little bit different those last few weeks. Like, you really kind of, maybe it's practices are shorter. You're reading your guys, like, is everyone healthy? What's the intensity look like at practice? So it starts with that. It starts with the plan in place on like making them understand what each day is going to look like at nationals. And then the last thing is like, you can't overlook anybody, especially if you're a higher seed. Like, you saw what happened last year with some of those teams that had those big upsets. So like, that first game is so important, like getting your feet wet. I think that's really the difference between like the D2 and the D1. Like, the D2, you could get there, lose the first game, maybe you're not playing well, but you build momentum and you could still win it, right? Where the D1 level, it's kind of hard to turn it on. Like, you have to be ready to go from game one. And I think game one like sets the tone. Like, in last year, I thought we really set the tone in game one, and then we built on it throughout the tournament. But if you're getting there game one and like, you're not prepared, you're not ready to go, like, you know, you could easily lose. And then at the end of the day, it's like, man, it was a long season just to get bounced in the first round. So preparation is everything, both kind of mentally and then within the locker room.
Well, Coach, we'll let you start preparing for the second half of the season. We appreciate you joining us this week and wish you the best of luck in the second half.
Thanks for having me. Always a pleasure talking.
Once again, thank you to Coach Raboni for joining us. Always cool to get a coach's perspective every once in a while. Mix in a coach or two every now and then so we can get kind of the real deal, the real story behind UNLV hockey. And, of course, just a wild start to the season for them, and hoping they make it back to St. Louis and can kind of get back on their redemption tour here, because, you know, they came so close in the national tournament final last year against Adrian. But we got some games to watch here, and it'll kind of roll us right into our bingo board update from the start of the season here, when we predicted some things that may or may not happen throughout the year. We'll take a look at that, and then we'll take a look at Jersey of the Year before we wrap up the show here. But one team that certainly made a dent in bingo boards is returning to home ice this week after a semester filled with arena troubles. The number one team in the ACHA, the Ohio Bobcats, will play host to Pittsburgh in their first home game of the season. Basically had all of their home games get canceled because there was no ice at Bird Arena the fall semester. They were road warriors every game on the road, and they basically cruised to a number one ranking because while everybody else was beating up on each other, the boys had basically November and December off, and they've been sitting on that number one spot. So I'm sure the boys from Pitt are going to come to town and try to make some noise, but that'll be cool to see Bird Arena packed again. And another game on our radar is Oregon is making the trip to Bend, which, last year they faced off against Washington. The year before that, I believe it was Boise State, but this year it's the boys from Rochester University going out there to take on the Ducks in the annual outdoor classic. The boys will make the trip to Bend, usually play in front of a sellout crowd of 800 plus, you know, sometimes even 1,000 standing room only. But got to team up with them behind the scenes with Selly Hockey. So we got some custom hats going out to Oregon. We were kind of chatting before the show. Fitzy was talking about getting some hats for Christmas, but wait until you guys see these hats we did for Oregon. I think if we were selling them on our website, they would be the best seller. Just a clean classic Ducks hockey script with that Puddles the Duck logo on it. So looking forward to getting those custom hats out again. I think the last time we talked it was getting gearing up for, you know, the second semester and getting those custom orders in, but I think now we're locked in on getting the boys ready for the off season with the custom orders. So if you're interested in doing a custom order, hit us up at sellyhockeyco.com. We'll get you started. We'll get you looking real nice, like the Oregon Ducks will look for their outdoor games this weekend in Bend. Taking a look at the bingo boards. If you guys are looking at what I'm looking at, I tried to color code it, and we've got green is like, I can confirm that that did happen. Red is I can confirm that that is not going to happen. And white is either hasn't happened yet, or I can't confirm if it did or didn't happen yet. So looking through the bingo boards, Collins, is there anything maybe on your board that you're surprised about or bummed about or looking forward to?
Well, first, I want to argue C-tier celeb wears jersey on campus.
All right. I couldn't find one that came to mind, or I didn't go looking that hard. So
it was the UNC the guitar guy or bass player who wore the UNC hockey jersey.
All right.
I'm trying to remember what band that was from, like September or something.
Was it Jelly Roll's bass player?
Yeah, it was Jelly Roll's bass player.
Okay, I think that could be a C-tier celebrity. I was thinking the first one that came to mind, I was like, I don't know, is he pop? I think he's a C-tier celebrity to me, but Grady Dick on the Toronto Raptors wearing the Kansas jersey. So I'll give you that one.
Yeah, well, Grady Dick's a C-tier celebrity. Very serviceable bench guy, you know. So yeah, I think more in my eyes he might be actually closer to A tier. That jersey swap was incredible. But
brawl at the backyard brawl, we might have to look at the footage. I'm sure there was a good scrum that we could classify as a brawl if you really wanted points.
I wrote no on mine for that. I have the sheet from, you know, from August. I think if there was an actual fight, we would have heard about it. So, I think Herm would beg to differ if it was just a little scrum. I think it's got to be, you know, two guys actually going at it. But one I'm looking forward to, and I really hope this plays out because, you know, we mentioned it when the news broke. And then since the news broke, we haven't heard a single thing about it except for when the teams were announced. Team USA reaches the finals of the World University Games. And I completely forgot about that up until today and just Googled it. And it's this weekend, Sunday. We got the schedule here for Team USA. January 12th, USA takes on Poland. The 14th, we take on Japan. 15th is Slovakia. And the 17th is Ukraine. So, you know, this is the real pool of death here. I mean, Japan and Poland, oof, we got some tough games. But at the same time, Canada also has, a tough schedule. They got Korea, you know, that's going to be real tough. So I'm hoping this pans out. Obviously, things are going to change once you get to the, out of the group stage and you take on the likes of Sweden, Canada, et cetera. I mean, Slovakia is not going to be easy either. That's going to be a tough one. So I'm hoping that really pans out and our UCHJ boys can show out and bring another one home for Team USA at world tournaments.
Love it. Yeah, we were chatting before recording. We're watching the ACCHL All-Stars out in Europe right now. The College Hockey South All-Stars out in Europe. So loving the club hockey all-star teams doing the Euro tours here, and can't wait to tune in to watch USA at the World University Games. I saw my reminder for it was I saw one of the Adrian goalies. They did the old pad wrap, and they did like the navy blue and red pad wrap with the stars sticker. So that was my we're right around the corner for World University Games. So looking forward to that one. Fitzy, looking at your bingo board, any surprises here? I know we mentioned definitely a Michigan. That was a really good first pick. I gave you ESPN Sports Center feature because, like we talked about, the Penn State goalie who made it. They didn't give him an ACHA shout out, but I think we can count it for us. Anything else you may be looking forward to or still have hope of happening?
The Tar Heels, my North Carolina boys. I'm a little bummed. I was really hoping they'd come out with another really good jersey, and it's a little disappointing. But I still love them. And then a dog dropping the ceremonial puck. I thought me throwing that out there might get the gears rolling and people would be like, oh, that's kind of a sick idea. Like, let's get a good doggo in here and we'll have him drop the puck. Like, people will love it. Get some fans to the games just to see the dog. I'm hoping that one happens. I think that'd be a wholesome thing that the world can use.
Speaking of providing inspiration, can we talk about Herm's first one? I think Ohio heard that and took that way too literally. Yeah. Rink malfunction cancels game.
It was
cancels half the season.
It was a homer pick. Ohio was doing Herm a favor. They were trying to get him as many. Cause then I got, rink malfunction cancels game. I had outdoor game gets canceled due to warm weather. I did a slight fist bump, a slight one. Again, I mentioned I feel bad for the Vandy and Duke guys who didn't get to play, but saw that one coming. And I had ACHA team beats NCAA Division III team, which I probably should have just said, I should have clarified NCAA because I could have used the UNLV one, but are the girls at URI, they had a sweep. They beat Nichols College and they beat Riviere. So they bailed me out on that one. But yeah, Herm had some great ones too. He also got M3 team beats M1 team. The boys from Hope beat the boys from Purdue Northwest in an overtime thriller. So he got that one as well.
And then didn't Jamestown beat an NCAA D3 team as well?
No, they lost, but they hadn't lost.
It was
they
close.
They were undefeated at the time, and I think they lost like 2-1 or maybe 3-1 with an empty netter. So that was like technically their first loss, but it wasn't an ACHA game, so they were still listed as undefeated. But yeah, we're looking forward to this. I forgot to mention at the top of the show, but we're talking about Herm. You know, he's just grinding away. He's killing it with Bleacher Report Open Ice. And so we hope to have him on at the kind of the end of the season to get his feedback here. But until then, we'll keep you posted on what he's doing, but we can't wait to have him kind of jump on and give another update here for you when that happens. But wrapping up Jersey of the Year as we get ready to close out the show here. Didn't do the draft live this year just because of time constraints, but happy to be partnering with Casper Sports. They did the custom Hockey House jerseys for us at the start of the year. The one I have behind me on my wall, Fitzy's got it behind his wall too. And, you know, Collins, he's got to keep that security deposit so he can't be drilling jerseys in his wall. But I'm sure it would have been.
I've got it on the wall.
Oh, we've got it on the wall. Are we going to pan?
We'll try to pan as much as we can.
Oh, whoa. There's, we're breaking the fourth wall. I can see me and Fitzy. Yeah, there we go.
There it is. And then there we got the Grateful Dead in the back. You know, it's tough being an adult now. You can't really, you know, put jerseys on the wall anymore, like as much as you did that in college. Like I had to frame a poster for the first time. That sucked.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I gave up. I have a framed jersey, and my rule of my apartment is if it can't go up with command hooks, it's just never gonna go up. It'll just lean against the wall on the floor. And I was tired of this blank space behind me, so I was like, you know what, we're gonna do a command hook. We'll have one singular jersey outside of the frame just for the purposes of the aesthetic. But didn't do the Jersey of the Year draft live, teamed up with Casper. They are running a thing. Fitzy, I know you mentioned you thought Carolina was a shoe-in. Maybe they should team up with Casper, because next year Casper is giving away free sublimated alternate jerseys as long as you order their pro embroidered home and away set. Minimum of 20 players per team. Really cool opportunity. If you're watching the feed and seeing Jersey of the Year and you're like, hey, our school could do something better, get in touch with the guys at Casper. They're going to do a home away set for you and throw in a free alternate set that's sublimated, and perfect partner for the tournament. But had some really good picks. I don't know if you guys have been following along, but we're on to the Sweet 16. That all four top seeds are still alive. SMU will face off against Kutztown tomorrow. We got App State versus Kansas. I sewered Syracuse. I wasn't even thinking. I got, because we seed the tournament, right? We all, the four of us, got together with Scott from Casper, and we picked, and you know, we pick the top 25, and then the rest are basically the favorites who didn't get picked. And so, you know, SMU is the first pick of the draft, so they go one. And just the way it's seeded, I might have picked Syracuse too high, because then they ended up in, I don't know how nobody picked Kansas, because Kansas had a great light blue jersey. A lot of light blue jerseys, a lot of script jerseys, a lot of black jerseys, a lot of cream jerseys, but it seems to be the theme this year. Anyways, I felt bad. Syracuse gets bounced in the first round to Kansas. We have number 2 seed Miami, another cream jersey, going against Scranton's Electric City jerseys. South Carolina Pinstripes versus Wyoming. Number 3 Tennessee taking on Villanova. We have a basketball school versus a basketball jersey, and that'll be a good matchup. Collins, you're still alive there. We got Kentucky versus Miami of Ohio, and we've got Ohio versus Oregon and Liberty versus Arizona State. Ohio coming out with some nice throwback ACHA jerseys, and they're going to hopefully make a run in this tournament here. But tournament tournament had two teams from Ohio. The rule this year, I call it the UNC rule, is you could only have one jersey per team. So Ohio has two ACHA teams, and both of their jerseys cracked the list. We had two Miamis, different states, though. We had the Miami Hurricanes and the Miami Redhawks, both in the tournament. But I'm curious, do you guys see any surprises here? Any maybe jerseys that made the tournament that you had kind of completely forgotten about? Collins, I'll kind of throw it over to you. You usually got some good jersey takes.
Nothing I'm like crazy surprised about in terms of who's here. But like, in my opinion, compared to years past, this has been a somewhat subtle year for jersey design. I think our critiques have maybe caught wind among the ACHA. I mean, excluding Wyoming and Arizona State.
The 51st state, Wyoming.
Yeah. You know, I think both of those jerseys are absolutely gorgeous. I love the 90s look, you know, taking inspiration from the Bruins reverse retro, and what was it, Arizona, the Kachina kind of. And it's kind of like, I guess a hybrid between Kachina, Bruins reverse retro, and like the Avs a little bit, a 90s Avs. Both of those. So I really like those. Villanova, unfortunately, I think we're Seward headed to Tennessee. That's going to be a tough one, especially with the account. I'm still mourning the loss of it. You know, 3,000 followers I put all that hard work into, and just gone. Now we got 300. So go drop Villanova Hockey a follow, Villanova M Hockey on Instagram. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll see where it goes. I liked all the jerseys this year. Like I said, way more subtle compared to years past. No dick jokes. So yeah.
I the biggest surprise I saw, and this is actually a jersey that Fitzy talked about, and was Kutztown had their like 40th anniversary jerseys, and they're like the white jerseys with the white shells and the white socks and the gold trim. And they went up against Adrian's women's gold jerseys. And I'm like, these jerseys won a national championship, clean, classic college hockey. And the Kutztown jerseys just blew them out of the water. And I'm like, geez, like, I mean, people are coming out of the woodwork to vote for the Golden Bears here. So Fitzy, any surprises for you? Any looks that you like so far?
That was Kutztown was going to be my original sleeper pick when we released that graphic. But I felt weird just kind of picking them if I had entered them into the tourney to begin with. So I'm really excited about that jersey. I don't know why I like it a lot, but I do. The Jacks, that was my sleeper I went with. I was disappointed. I remember when that jersey first came out and we talked about it a couple episodes ago. I don't know, something about that one that I liked. But yeah, I agree with Collins. I think that there's been just some really nice jerseys this year. When we did the draft, it was really hard for me to kind of narrow down like my top five. And then from there, you know, well, narrow down my top 10. And then from there, narrow down to more of like a top five. It was tough. There were a lot of good ones this year.
That's why this year I want to make sure we did a kind of a graphic with like your pick, who you think is going to win, your favorite jersey, your sleeper, and the team that you got cut. Because I think a lot of times people see the graphic and they're like, these guys don't even know what they're doing. They don't know what they're talking about. And it's like, yeah, like we like this. I love the Syracuse jerseys, but I know that the Tennessee jerseys are going to get a lot of votes, right? So that's who I picked to win. And the Jacks jerseys were great, but it's like they're going up against Kentucky, who's got, yeah, the camouflage jerseys are sick. Are they cooler than these? I don't know. I wouldn't say they are, but SEC country hockey jersey, big logo, gets people going.
Yeah, and I think too, like, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, it's like, who's got the most Instagram followers? Because I think, what was it, for 2 years in a row, it was South Carolina Liberty. And then, like, you know, or it was either one of those schools in the final. I think it was Liberty 2 years in a row. You know, is what it is. You just got to kind of be realistic and, you know, look at who's going to be the most passionate fan base. Like, if I'm being honest, I think I chose South Carolina to win. I've seen better South Carolina jerseys. I think they, you know, it's not a bad jersey, but I think they could have done way better just based on years past. I'm not a fan of the pinstripe, to be 100% honest, but, you know, it's still a good jersey. But, you know, they got the followers. They're the most followed team in, you know, in the ACHA and AAU. So, you know, you got to keep that in mind.
A lot of heavy hitters left, right? We got South Carolina, Kentucky, Ohio, Oregon, Liberty. Those are some big names, some big brands in the ACHA. But we're looking forward to the second semester coming up here. Again, us old guys out of school, we're not even opening up any textbooks, not even thinking about going back to campus. But everyone's in the workforce. We're enjoying it. We appreciate you guys for tuning in. And hopefully we'll come back in a couple of weeks. We'll get some updates here and we'll get ready to prep for the national tournaments coming up in March. So thanks again for tuning in. And as always, we'll see you next week.
See you, boys.
Maybe not next week.
In a little.